Thanks for listening to Schlereth and Evans On Demand, brought to you by Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. If you're in the market for replacement windows, there's only one place to turn. That's Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. Visit them online at windowsforyourhome.com.
Oh, so good. So good after a long grinding week. I came back just for this.
What were you doing? What were you doing?
My bride and I were in Las Vegas for 3 days.
Oh, really? Sounds interesting.
Saw a Prince cover band.
Did you?
Oh, so good.
Really?
Oh, it was good. It was awesome. Anyway,
was it Dave Chappelle?
No.
Did he play that role?
No, he could have. Here we go. Jefferson and Broomfield on an Is It Just Me Friday, setting the tone perfectly. Is it just me, or did Mike skip through the whole week just to come back on Friday to hear the song?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I did. Now I might as well take the rest of the week off.
Can you do that? You could roll out of here.
Heard the song. Got what I wanted.
And now you're out.
And I'm off.
See you later.
That's nice.
Yeah, so it was good. So how you doing?
I'm doing good, man. Yeah. I'm doing really good. Yeah. Zach did a nice job while you were gone.
Yeah, thank you very much to Zach. Appreciate that.
And, I had a nice time in Houston and, with my bride and Daniel, and we had a good time. So got to see some friends, got to see some baseball. It was good.
Yeah, and being in Las Vegas with the start of the Stanley Cup Finals with the Vegas Knights.
Oh, how was that? Was that crazy?
I'll tell you what. Nothing compares to the scope of what happens in Las Vegas, okay? That said, I wasn't here in 96 when the Avalanche came to town and won the Stanley Cup.
Uh-huh.
But I could see how it might be similar in that people were sort of like, wow, you know, we got this hockey team. Wow, it's a really good hockey team. And wow, we're in the Stanley Cup Finals. And wow, we're winning the Stanley Cup Finals, you know? And everybody kind of trying to figure out, you know, what it's all about, understanding the game, getting, you know, everybody jumping on the bandwagon. Definitely like that in Las Vegas. Like, we're walking along the strip. And all of a sudden, like, people are just running by us. And I'm like, what the heck? And then it dawns on me, they got to be doing some kind of giveaway, right? Some kind of, I don't know, scavenger hunt or something. Literally, right. People are running, you know, down the sidewalk. And I, you know, one of them was kind of lagging out of breath. And I said, what's this all about? Oh, the Knights are giving away Stanley Cup tickets. And apparently it was some kind of follow the clues type thing. And
right.
So people were into it. I don't think many of them know what the heck hockey's even about, but
sure,
you know,
it doesn't matter. Jump on the bandwagon,
exactly.
Have a little fun.
What's wrong with that?
It's all good.
So, but good to be back. Just in time to walk into this Broncos ownership drama. So, what have you heard about what's going on? I guess specifically, why do the Broncos this trust? Why are they so down on the idea of Beth Bolin being the controlling owner when you have brothers of Pat Bowlen coming out and saying they absolutely, absolutely endorse her?
Well, I think there's a couple of things that, you know, that I've been told and talking to the folks that I know. The way it was worded is at this time. So there's two different pieces to the puzzle here, Mike. There is the quantitative stuff, education, work experience, you know, all these different things that were laid out in the trust. How much time do you need working, you know, with the NFL in the organization? What kind of job do you have within the, how long have you done those things? What's your educational best base? What have you worked toward? You know, what's your kind of quote unquote business acumen? All these different things. And then the qualitative stuff is character of person, character of what you've done and all those things. And the way the trust worded it is at this time that she is not qualified. Doesn't mean she won't be qualified in 2 years. It doesn't mean she won't be qualified at some point, but the way they worded it was at this time. And, you know, obviously the NFL agreed because they extended the time that the trust had to make this ownership decision. And, you know, I think it, the one thing curious in regards to Beth is the trust has reached out to her on several different occasions to sit down to go through the process and to go through the requirements and to talk about where they are as a trust and where they think she is. And apparently she has declined to have that meeting on multiple occasions. Which again, you know, if you want to talk about just surface, why you're not ready, if you're not going to come sit down with the folks that have controlling interest, and to find out what they think the qualifications are and where they sit as a trust. I mean, it's a pretty simple deal, right? And I think, you know, the way it was expressed to me is the reason that Pat Bowlen set it up this way is he wanted somebody outside the family to have control to see, you know, first and foremost, if one of the kids is ready, if one of the kids is qualified, if one of the kids meets the requirements set up by Mr. Bowlen, then certainly that's his desire to have one of the kids take over. If none of them can meet those requirements, then they're going to sell the team. And it's, I think that's, if that makes sense, right? So here it is. Here's what I, here's my wishes as an owner. I want one of my kids to take over, but I'm not just going to willy-nilly it. Like Mr. Bowlen never willy-nilly anything. You know, this is the way he operated his business. And listen, it says a lot about the integrity and the person that he is. If one of my kids isn't ready, they're not going to get the opportunity, Mike. Does that not, is that not encompass, the Mr. B that you've watched here for the last 30 plus years? Like, to me, it makes sense. And again, the qualifier here is at this time, we did not think as a trust that Beth Bowlen was, you know, the right choice or was ready for this responsibility.
Any idea why she's still not working with the team?
I do not know. I do not know why she's not still with the team. But, you know, like I said, there are, they reached out and said she knows. And so, which makes it feel like, you know, that there's two factors, the, like I said, the educational, the quantitative stuff and then the qualitative stuff. And, just makes me feel like, you know, they let her go for a reason. And, you know, and she didn't work with the organization. She didn't work in the NFL in her 20s or her 30s. She, you know, she came into kind of the community outreach program and worked on the Ring of Fame stuff. And I think that was in her 40s when she started doing that. So,
yeah, she's 47.
2012. And she did that for a part of 3 years, I think. So,
correct.
So, you know, I don't know that she was in the business, you know, part of the Broncos or any of that kind of stuff. So again, at this time, I think that's the key. And I think, you know, you have to focus on that. And then you have to believe, because the NFL is involved in this process, you have to believe that they've reviewed the process and feel like the trust is still the best option for this organization going forward until they can make a decision here in the next 3, 4, or 5 years.
Okay, much more on this as we move along throughout the course of the morning. Again, it's Is It Just Me Friday. If you want to get some stuff off your chest, heading off into the weekend, hit us up. Those hot sports opinions on the RamosLaw.com text line, 303-713-1043. We heard from the coordinators yesterday. What does Bill Musgrave have to say about why and how this offense will be different and better this year? You'll hear it next. So we got a chance to hear from the coordinators yesterday. Bill Musgrave, Joe Woods. I know you're a Bill Musgrave fan.
Yeah, sure.
All right. For all of us who are tired of what we've seen here from the offense over the last few years.
Uh-huh.
Give us reasons for optimism based strictly on what you know about Musgrave and how he can put an offense together, his imprint on the offense, in a way that will make us all happy.
All right, so I think you go back 2 years to his coordination of the Raiders offense with, you know, a quarterback that was a young quarterback at the time in Derek Carr, or excuse me, in Derek Carr, not his brother David, but in Derek Carr, where he was an MVP candidate right up to the end of the season with a broken leg. If you remember that year where they came into Denver and ran six offensive linemen and crammed it down our throats and never gave an opportunity to the Broncos defense to rush the passer. I look at keep it simple, stupid. You know, run the ball, set up your play action, put your quarterback in a great position to win. They've already simplified the language. The West Coast offense, one of the big things with the West Coast offense is how difficult the language is, how much verbiage there is within a play call. And the article that I read yesterday is they tried to simplify some of that, you know, cut that down so there's not so much, so it's not so wordy, which, you know, I mean, just helps the flow in the huddle, get your play out. But the things that I think, you know, are tried and true, there's always going to be game planning aspects of it. But one thing that I believe that Bill will do, and I know him well enough, and I've played with him long enough, and I've watched his coaching career, and I've talked to him over the years. One thing that he will do he will establish our core. This is our core group of plays. Here's what we are. Here's our identity in first and 10. Here's our identity in second down and short, second down and long. Here are the core plays that we're going to polish and that we're going to run. And then off of these core plays, we're going to have play action and we're going to have the ability to get you based on formation in things that we know we can exploit. That's where game planning comes in. So the way Billy Moose will run this is, here's what we are, we're going to run this. Here's what we know you are, we're going to put you in a formation that's going to dictate the coverage, and now we're going to pick you apart. That's where game planning comes in. But the biggest thing that I have seen that hasn't translated well the last couple of years is, think about it. When Peyton was here, even though you won the Super Bowl in 2015, you were kind of amalgamating Gary Kubiak's offense with Peyton's offense, and it was kind of a disaster. Would you agree?
Mm-hmm.
Then in 2016, you were going back to Kubiak's offense, but you were doing it with essentially a rookie quarterback who was injured, and the guy that you drafted just wasn't mentally prepared to play. So you had a couple of issues there. And then obviously last year under Mike McCoy, you tried to take a volume offense and shove it into a new system with too many moving parts, too many young players, too many guys that, you know, haven't experienced it. And it was a disaster. And then you didn't adhere to the formula you said you were going to adhere to. So I think the keep it simple, stupid process is tried and true. I think allowing your players to just go out and be aggressive and not have to think about a bunch of checks and a bunch of different things, I think those things are really good, especially when you have some new players, new quarterback, and you're developing. Come on, you're developing middle of the field players. You're trying to develop a tight end. You're trying to develop a slot receiver. These are things that are important, and that's what, you know, I know Billy to be. So I think those things, I hear those things about simplifying things. That to me is like good, because that's what needs to happen.
All right, well, here's Musgrave himself talking about keeping it simple, stupid.
I think it definitely applies to this day and age. You're right. I know where you're going with that. But I think it just helps. You know, we don't want to be thinking out there as players. We want to know what to do. And while a lot of football is X's and O's and what are we doing, when are we doing it, why are we doing it, the crux of it is, how do we do it? And we really are training our players on how to execute these plays this spring, the technique. And, you know, that's where our focus is right now. We've got them a system, but now we want to really train them on how to be sound Denver Broncos and really execute those plays out on the field. Well, we're trying to make it concise. We don't want long-worded plays in the huddle. We've got three or four ways to go no huddle, and a lot of those are one-word calls. So we love for guys to know it like the back of their hand, and then they can just cut it loose and play. That's what we're trying to get done. And so that's why we've kind of brought the language from Atlanta or Minnesota or Oakland. I've had time on task where I feel like it can be teachable, it can be learnable, and then guys can execute it and cut it loose out there on the field.
All right, so keep it simple. Let them go out and play. I talked to D'Angelo Henderson last week, and he was saying this exact same thing. There isn't as much language. We're freed up to go be football players. And look, Mike McCoy has been an offensive coordinator in this league for a long time. He's been successful. Apparently he runs a complicated offense. Josh McDaniels runs a complicated offense. I would say maybe Kyle Shanahan. Would you say his offense is?
There's a lot of words. Yeah, a lot of words.
So, what should be the goal here? Or should it be finding Bronco football players on offense that can get to the level of intelligence and understanding to be able to run these kind of offenses? What does it say if it needs to be simplified?
You're insinuating that we're not as smart as the New England Patriots or the Niners or
the Atlanta Falcons.
Right.
You know, some of those teams.
No, listen, here's the deal. As you motor through, Josh McDaniels has been in New England forever. The players, the quarterback in Atlanta has been there forever. And Kyle Shanahan has been running a system or a variation of a system for a very long time. The other thing about Kyle Shanahan now, Kyle Shanahan gets plays in early. Kyle Shanahan does a lot of coaching through the headset. A lot of coaching through the headset. So, you know, it's not like, hey, we have a really wordy offense. We're smarter than everybody else. You know, sometimes it's not about working harder. It's about working smarter. And you heard Bill Musgrave talk about Atlanta. He talked about Minnesota, the language. So what did he do? You know what's smart? Take the language that your quarterback's already used to, the guy that you signed to be your starter, and bring it in with you. And let me learn it as a coaching staff, you know, and then implement that. So that to me isn't, hey, our players aren't smart enough. That to me is, hey, we're smarter as a coaching staff.
See, you guys, when you were winning in Washington, when you were winning in Denver, I mean, you talk about jokingly, but it's serious that, you know, oftentimes you had a very limited, scaled-back playbook. You didn't need to. The other guy knew what was coming. Didn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
You had better players. You got executed. But in today's NFL, is that still what wins, or is there a sense that, look, you got to be smarter than the other guy? You got to be able to out-scheme the other guy. And if we're running a simplified offense, does that give you the edge that you need?
If you execute, yes. And if you're smart from a game planning standpoint and taking advantage of a team, the bottom line with good teams is they can go out and they can execute the plays called at a high level. And most teams have their go-to things that they love and that they're great at executing. And that's what you're trying to establish. The other stuff is, hey, we're going to game plan in this specific part of the field. But yes, it's still very important to keep it simple and to give players, to give them a system in which they can execute and go out with great confidence, regardless of what the defense shifts into, and know exactly what they're going to do and understand how to execute that. That's important.
Hey, go see Stokely and Zach broadcasting live at Blake Street Tavern today from 12 to 3 for your chance to win a $100 gift card to Blake Street Tavern. Here comes the morning brew, and especially as us Nugget fans are concerned, who buys the idea that J.R. Smith really thought that the game wasn't tied last night when he made the blunder that he made? Come on, it's JR. That's next.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents Schlereth and Evans.
Good morning.
Morning.
It's time for your morning brew.
Things are going to get weird.
You're going to eat lightning, and you're going to crack thunder.
Okay, this guy needs coffee and coolers. Stop!
You know what can really help you sort through these important issues?
What? Orange mocha frappuccino!
Damn, Jimmy. This is some serious gourmet shit.
Let's get it on!
Obviously, this is a very strong-run organization. It's not difficult to market at all. We have an incredible fan base, which, from my dad's perspective, is really the owner of the organization. He's just been facilitating that.
That is Beth Bolin from a couple years ago, who made or staked her claim to want to be the next owner of the Denver Broncos, to which the trust that runs the Broncos emphatically came out and said, no, she is not qualified. She is not with the team in any capacity right now, and did not give any more details as to why she's not with the team anymore. Mark, does it just, first of all, it's clear. It's down to two people. It's either Beth Bolin, 47, mm-hmm. or Brittany Bolin, who is 27. Is it as simple as this, that the Broncos just feel that the younger Brittany Bolin has shown more commitment, more interest, is taking the proper steps, and thus is being groomed to be the next owner of the Denver Broncos?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fair to say that as the trust stated at this time, they didn't think Beth was, you know, ready, whether it was qualified or whatever the case may be. Brittany has certainly gone down that path, educationally, finance degree from Notre Dame, then a MBA at Duke, and she's worked, you know, in a program with the NFL. She's, you know, she's currently working. She's done internships. She's currently working, in the business world. So, like, she's taking the proper steps. And I think you could make an argument that that's probably the way the trust is leaning, based upon resume, you know, based upon what you've done and the way you've prepared yourself. But at 27, you know, they probably don't feel comfortable at 27 either. So you need to extend the time to make sure that the most qualified candidate emerges. And if nobody emerges in the next 4 or 5 years, if it's not Beth or if it's not Brittany, then the trust will be selling the Denver Broncos. But I think that's, I mean, in a nutshell, I think that kind of explains it. Next on the Morning Bro.
Case is getting exclusively all the reps with the ones. We're not splitting them like you would if you didn't have an established starter. So he's getting more concentrated work, and it's paying dividends.
Bill Musgrave, offensive coordinator, is this a perfect case in your opinion? Because Mike McCoy was here using this as a stepping stone to getting back into being a head coach. Do you look at a guy like Bill Musgrave? You know him very well. Is he the kind of guy that, sure, he has opinions, he has feelings about what he wants in an offense, but is he also the kind of guy that will also sit back and say, I can see what worked for Case Keenum in Minnesota, let's build something that fits to his strengths, rather than just him insisting that he fits into what my beliefs are?
Yeah, because Bill Musgrave played. I mean, he understands putting guys in positions that help them out. I mean, there's a reason that you grab kind of the language from Minnesota, as he talked about earlier, or he talked about yesterday. There's a reason you do those things, because you want the quarterback that you've decided to be your starter, the guy that you've paid, you want him to be as comfortable as possible. You also want that guy to be in a position to execute, in a position to do the things that he feels most comfortable doing. And you know, let's face it. I mean, the only way you tend to realize, the only, you know, experience is the best teacher. The only way that you really realize what you love and what you don't like is by doing it. I know the plays, you know, when I played, I knew when we got a call in the huddle, if I love the play, like, yeah, this is a great play. I love this play. Right. And you get excited about it. And I also knew the ones that I hated. Like, ugh, I hate, you know, because if I get this, it makes it hard. And if I do this and this is like, so you have those favorite plays. As a coach, why wouldn't you want to put your players in a position to make a call and they're like, oh man, I love, this is my favorite. Like, I love this. Like, why wouldn't you want to put your quarterback in that position as many times as possible during the course of a game? Of course you would. That to me is called smart coaching.
Next on the Morning Brew.
It's up. It's short. It's grabbed by J.R. Smith. Smith is going to run it out. I think J.R. didn't know how much time was left. J.R. tried to dribble up near the timeline, and we're going to overtime. Oh, my goodness. I think J.R. thought the Cavs had the lead. He grabbed the loose ball, dribbled up near midcourt, and by the time he decided to pass it to somebody, the clock had expired. We're going to overtime.
Cavaliers Radio. J.R. Smith claims he thought the Cavaliers were going to call a timeout in that situation. He insisted after the game that he knew it was a tied ball game.
Mm.
I don't buy it.
No, there's no way.
Do you?
No, come on. It's J.R. Smith.
Right.
He didn't know anything. And J.R. Smith thought they had the lead. He dribbled. He thought he was going to be a hero. Come on. It's J.R. And like that, there are plenty of...
Sorry, Hans, wrong guess.
Right. And plenty of other mistakes in that game of JR being JR, you know, taking people's legs out. And then the gaffe at the very end of the first half where he let Steph Curry knock one down from 30 yards as he went flailing by him, or 30 feet. Yeah, come on. No, I don't buy that at all. I think JR thought they had a one-point lead, and he thought he was going to end the game with a ball in his hand.
Yeah. No, you look at you. First of all, it sure looked like he turned to LeBron James, who was incredulous, like, "What were you doing?" And said, "I thought we were ahead."
Yeah.
And then the body language on the bench during the timeout was
right,
screaming that
I just screwed this
up, and LeBron's mad at me. And then you look at the way that Golden State just blew him out in overtime. It was almost like Cleveland knew. So here's the question: did Cleveland blow their one chance at making this a series?
You blew it!
No, I mean, they're going to go back to Cleveland. They're going to play in Cleveland. LeBron was unbelievable. I don't think they blew their only chance. I mean, it's certainly going to make it hard. Don't get me wrong, but they didn't blow their only chance. But what? Just so ridiculous.
So JR.
It's just
so
just,
JR. Right. I mean, come on. As see, and we as Nugget fans have a better understanding of all this.
Right.
So as you're watching that, you're just, aren't you like I was just sort of like a knowing, like I was nodding. Mm-hmm. Like I just I was nodding, little grin on my face, like, yep.
That's JR.
That's JR. Next on the Morning Brew.
Yesterday, before the game, he was letting it rip. We're talking about trying to get him off the mound here at some point soon. He's pain-free right now, and now we're just trying to let the progress kind of just take care of itself. But it's very promising to get him back soon.
Well, that was before the game for the Dodgers and Dave Roberts talking about Clayton Kershaw's return, who, coming back from being out for about a month with bicep tendonitis, pitched pretty well yesterday in his return, but his back flared up.
Mm.
He's going to have an MRI on it today, and he's had noted back issues in the past. As the Rockies get ready to open up a series with the Dodgers this weekend at Coors Field, if Clayton Kershaw isn't right, do you now make the Rockies the favorite to win the West?
Well, Clayton Kershaw isn't right, neither is John Gray.
Yeah, but one guy's making... Come on, Clayton Kershaw's getting paid, what, $300 million? When have the Rockies ever... The Dodgers have always depended upon Clayton Kershaw. When have the Rockies ever depended on John Gray?
Well, they keep saying he's an ace.
Well...
Or he's got ace stuff.
That's a fallacy.
Yeah, okay, so... Are the Rockies... It's hard to make the Rockies a favorite.
I get it.
But, yeah, okay. They're the favorite.
But part of the idea of the Dodgers is that, well, you know, the Dodgers, they'll get healthy and they'll make their typical second half run. But a lot of that's based on the idea of Clayton Kershaw, you know, being healthy for the meat of the season.
Right.
And it's shaping up like he may not be.
They did it last year. They made their run in the second half of the season last year. We'll see. I mean, we'll see. I still, right-handed bat, they still need to be better. You know, when your guy that's coming into the season is supposed to be your ace isn't performing, You know, there's still some question marks, Mike.
Corona's fan dream jobs only weekend audition is tomorrow. We're going to be at the View House Centennial. Auditions begin at noon, giving listeners an opportunity to potentially join the fan as a talk show host. For more information, go to 1043thefan.com. Hosted one of these last week. It's a lot of fun. Met some really cool people. A little bit of talent there, too. So check it out tomorrow at View House Centennial. This whole Broncos ownership drama. Okay, it's real. It's out there. But do you as a fan really care? That's next. This got Broncos ownership drama, Mark. Okay, it's, you know, it's the stuff of, you know, good TV drama. There's certainly a lot of moving parts here. There's certainly a lot of personalities. There's certainly a lot of egos. And you're talking about a $2.5 billion business that's on the line, as well as a legacy, a family legacy. So we get all of that. What do you think the average fan out there thinks about all this? Is it a big deal to them?
I don't really think it's that big a deal. I think the average fan looks at the organization and says, we just want to continue our winning ways. And feel like with Elway running it and with Joe Ellis running it and the quote-unquote trust doing what Mr. Bolin wished them to do, or ask them to execute. I think most people feel pretty good about kind of the way it's set up. I don't think they really worry about the way it's set up.
All right, let's go at it this way. If all of a sudden a Beth Bolin or a Brittany Bolin became owner, they are the owner.
Mm-hmm.
Do you suspect the Broncos, as we have known them and know them, would look different? Then it becomes important to the fans.
Right.
Do you get a sense that the way that the team is run would change?
I don't get a sense that it would. I get a sense that regardless of who took this over, where the ownership went, if it stays within the family and goes to the most qualified family member, that family member would honor their father by adhering to the principles that their father set for this organization. So I would assume that they would continue to appoint the people that have been appointed by their father to help run the organization, and that they would make sure that football people ran the football part of this organization.
Okay, then that brings me to the crux of my read on all of this. If everything here is being done above board, if this is just an honest evaluation of the two candidates, Beth Bolin and Brittany Bolin, and it simply is, look, we look at these two and we see, in our opinion, one is more qualified, one is more committed than the other. And that's why we believe Brittany Bolin, for example, is going to be the better choice and is being groomed for this. I'm cool with that. But Mark, because you are talking about this $2.5 billion enterprise and NFL ownership, And what that means and how special it is, especially continuing on the legacy of Pat Bolin. My concern is that there are other biases involved. Meaning, okay, Beth Bolin, comes from Pat Bolin's first wife. Annabelle Bolin wants to have one of her children run the franchise and certainly not one of his other children. What about that bias? What about the idea of, hey, you know, Brittany Bolin, if she takes over, she's more likely to keep the status quo in place. Joe Ellis continues to run the team. John Elway continues to run the team. Pretty much, you know, standard operating procedure. Whereas maybe the perception is that if Beth Bolin takes over, it's more of a wild card. Who knows? Maybe she puts more of her own imprint on the front office. Maybe things are shaken up. Maybe people who have had jobs for a long time don't have those jobs anymore. Those are the things that I can't help but wonder, how much do they come in play?
Okay, I would answer that by saying that Pat Bolin's wishes were to have this very simple trust that has, what, three people in it?
Mm-hmm.
This very simple trust with a pretty direct and simple directive. That didn't really work out the way I thought it was going to work out.
Direct and simple mission statement.
Thank you. Direct and simple mission statement. That what we're going to do...
It was a mission statement.
It really
very
was.
Very Jerry Maguire.
Yeah, exactly.
Not a memo.
No, not a memo. What is your mission statement?
Right.
Here's what we're
going
to do.
Right.
We are going to find the most qualified candidate of the family members. And if they meet the criteria that we set up in this trust, that Mr. Bolin, if they meet his wishes, then that most qualified candidate is going to get the opportunity. If that doesn't happen, and remember now, I think one of the things it feels like, you know, that Joe Ellis extended himself and said, yeah, you know, I'm in charge here and I'm going to extend this for another, was the NFL said, you know what? You're right. There is no qualified candidate this time. We're going to extend this time period for you guys to find a suitable candidate, or at some point in the near future, we're going to have to sell the franchise.
How much of it is we're still going to give you the time to find that candidate, or we've been in communication with you, you feel like you have your candidate, but she's not ready yet?
Sure. I think that goes back to what Mr. Bolin's wishes are. Here's what I know, having been around the organization. Like, I can question a decision that John made to draft Paxton Lynch. I can question that. Right? That's fair. I will never question John's love for the Broncos, John's love for this organization, John's love for this community. I can question Joe Ellis's whatever I want to question. I will not question his loyalty. I will not question Joe's desire to execute Pat Bowlen's plan. I will not question his leadership from that standpoint. Joe Ellis is an honorable man. I know him to be a very honorable man, and he's going to do what his boss and what his friend Pat Bowlen asked him to do. And he's going to do it to the best of his ability. And he's going to try to make sure that it's done correctly.
You're going to clear the air?
Yes.
About?
I'm just going to give you kind of my feel of where this ownership thing sits and where it's going to go.
All right. Mark clears the air coming up next.